Hey, everybody, welcome back for another episode of The Overlay, a poker podcast brought to you by CCG, Chicago Charitable Games, number one live charity poker experience in Chicago. Even though I hate using the terminology number one because I find it to be so indifferent and people just randomly say it's number one, but I would say if you did a charity poker player survey, CCG would rank very high. True or false, Brandon?
I would go with true.
I would go with true. Hey, what's up, Doc? How you been?
Pretty good.
It's Easter weekend coming up.
Yeah. Easter's tough for me. I got a 6:30 a.m. church service.
Nice.
Brunch with the family.
Yeah, that whole Christmas and Easter time frame for church is really difficult, especially when you work Saturday night and then have to get up on Sunday morning.
But, you know, in the olden days, I used to have to drive home from Champaign and then rip it at 6:30. So, you know, at least I've omitted that from
the repertoire.
Yeah.
Okay. Episode 99. We are one episode away from lucky number 100. I don't know what the special thing shall be, but I'm sure we're going to do something when the 100th episode drops beginning of April. We're trying to do two episodes a month as best as we can. We've been pretty good so far in 2024, so thank you to everyone who has listened and supported and followed and reviewed and done all the cool stuff on the social media. So thank you, thank you, thank you. But today we've got kind of a fun episode, and it's going to be a new series that we're going to do within the podcast itself, and it's called The Poker Fix. Just because I love
that. Just wait till episode 100 to do this?
No, I think maybe for 100 we'll do like a highlights reel and like some giveaways. Maybe we'll do that, but 99 is The Poker Fix. I like it. So what's The Poker Fix, Brando? That's a rhetorical question you're supposed to throw back to me. What's The Poker Fix, Brando?
Oh, I don't know. Well, rhetorical questions aren't supposed to like think about them. There's no real answer. How am I supposed to throw it back to you if there's no answer?
Oh, well, there is.
I don't know,
answer.
Ken. What is it?
There we go. Hey, everybody. It's Ken here. The Poker Fix. I wanted to, Brandon and I were discussing about the idea of kind of common mistakes, things to look out for, trials and tribulations, things that every poker player needs to fix from the beginner player all the way through the expert, grinder, professional player. All of those range of players have some kind of flaw, leak, something within their game that they need to fix. And when I say they need to fix, it's just an idea of to improve one's game, you need to seek out and find your problems and then come up with a solution for them. Right, Brando?
That's correct.
That's a pretty good analogy
right there. Very thorough. Very thorough.
What the fix is. So we wanted to come up with a series of episodes. Plus, after 100 episodes, it's hard to think of new shit to talk about. I think this is a great way to do so. The Poker Fix. And what is the first poker fix that we're going to come up with?
I think we're going to, you know, I forgot what we said we were going to name it. But
you're the expert. I can't remember. So,
you know, it's more like diving into like your opponent's weaknesses and how just because you have a concrete plan going into a tournament and just because you studied a certain style and a way of poker, sometimes, you know, everything gets thrown out the window and you got to change it up and you got to really play against your specific opponents that are at your table that might not be conducive of your initial strategy.
Normal player, what you have the intention of normally doing. And I think what Brandon's getting to in a simplified version is today's poker fix, how to roll with the punches. And the idea of that is that, you know, we had kind of talked about it pre-episode today. You've got a battle plan. You've got your style of play. And that's really what we're discussing. Like, are you an aggressive player? Are you a kind of tight aggressive player? Are you kind of just a nit? Maybe you're just a calling station. I don't know. Maybe you're a whale and you're playing every two cards underneath the planet and seeing what's happening. Whatever your style of play is, you kind of go to the table and you have what you're comfortable with, what you believe is your best battle formation of your poker expertise that you go to the table with, right? But sometimes you do so and you realize you're at a table and it's not, it's after you've been there for a little while, you realize, hey, this is a very conservative table. I need to amp up my aggression. Or the opposite, this is a very aggressive table. Something has gone here on that players are pissed off and now they're just four betting and five betting, doing all this wild shit with terrible cards. Maybe I need to tone it down a notch. I need to be able to play a little bit more conservative than what I'm normal. So I think this is kind of the range within oneself and kind of when and how to adjust accordingly, right?
Yeah, I think it's more of like your ability to,
read
the entire community of the table. Not a specific player that's a fish.
No.
Not a specific old lady that's only playing aces.
Right.
You know, not look within yourself on how to, you know, battle this. It's more like the community or the economy of this table. How is
ecosystem,
it running?
Your current ecosystem.
Right. Your ecosystem and what's the best way to maneuver around it based on all the information that they've given you the previous, I don't know, let's just say within 45 minutes or an hour, you would be able to at least have a decent read on what's going on.
So about an hour. My first question is the time frame that you would say that you can get a good feel for a table, you're claiming is around about an hour.
I mean, I would say against random opponents that you've never played before.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would think if you're talking about the $20 or $40.
You're on vacation in Texas, playing at the lodge in Austin, and you don't know any of these Joes anywhere. No idea who's who. Obviously, if you're playing in your regular game.
Right. If you're playing in the $20.
You're going to see a lot of the same players.
You're going to know
right.
half the table when you sit down.
Correct.
And so you're going to be able to get a quicker read on the situation.
We're not talking about that. Right. We're talking about the idea of this is kind of you're in Vegas for the weekend for the WSOP, and you're going to play in a cash game, and you sit down, you've got a game plan, this is how I'm going to play, this is my normal style of play, and you're going to play that way for, you know, 45 minutes, hour 15, somewhere in there until you get a feel for the other players at the table and kind of what the dynamic is at the table and how things are going. Because we all know, like, you insert Ken, Vegas Ken, into a cash game, what happens?
Vegas Ken is probably pretty loose.
Anarchy.
Loose fun.
It is anarchy and chaos and fun. It's so much fun. Players really do enjoy playing with me. They should pay me to come and just play in the poker rooms because I punt money.
They'd still be winning. They would still be winners.
I punt money and I make the game more exciting, and there's lots of flips and blind bets and things that happen that I never get to do anywhere else.
You can do this all without even alcohol. Like most people,
I'm not drunk at all.
Drinks. It's, nah, oh, yeah.
Nah. This is just Ken's version of fun.
Right.
But how do you deal with a Ken version of fun? How do you deal with Vegas Ken in general? Like if you've got one player that's doing so, I guess my question is this, and I'm trying to phrase it in a way that kind of makes sense to you so that you can help me answer it. Obviously, there's going to be one or two key players at every table that are going to kind of dictate the motion in the ocean of your poker table, right?
Yeah.
So do you kind of focus on those players, and do you play your hands differently when they're in the pot versus when others are in the pot, or if it's you and table captain and a third player? Like, give me and again, I know it's very hard to do specifics, but like,
very hard to do specifics. My mind's racing right now.
How if you've got an uber aggressive kind of wild card player that's just going nutty, what do you do? Do you just say, screw it, strategy's out the window, I'm just going to enjoy myself and have some fun and let the chips fall where they may? Or do you try to come up with a plan on the fly, which is what this Poker Fix is all about today, is coming up with a plan on the fly. How do we do it, Brando? What do we do?
I think there's like kind of two approaches, you know. You can they're kind of polar opposites. You can just be like, I'm staying out of the way of this guy. Like, I'm not playing any of his funny business. If I'm going
I'm
to war with
sucked
him,
in.
If I'm going to war with him, it's going to be with the goods. And like, I'm just going to take my wax with my best hands and, you know, let him have his fun until he busts out of the tournament. I mean, you know, or busts out of cash or whatever we're playing here. Mm-hmm. Or you can take the approach of getting sucked in and saying, all right, the king 6-2 doesn't look so bad. Let me 3-bet him and see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, if he's open at every hand, how bad could king 6-2 to be? That's kind of more of what you're really, it really depends on what you're comfortable with. If you want to just say, I'm in Vegas too. I'm on vacation. Let's have some fun and get sucked in. Or just say, this guy probably won't be here too long. I know it would be nice to have his chips, but, you know, somebody else can go have fun with him. I'm going to just try and play my normal game with the other seven sane people and not get sucked in. But those are my two. It's like kind of all or nothing. I do. You're like, either in there or you're staying clear. So
you either got to get in the pool or stay out of the water.
Yeah, with a Vegas Ken, you just, I don't know. I don't know. This my notes on this episode don't really have much for involving one super crazy guy.
Right.
It's just your own personal preference there. You ain't going to be able to outplay him. I mean, you know, you're going to have to sack up and stick it in when you know you're good and hopefully you hold.
It's my favorite when I make a bet and they're like staring at me in Vegas and trying to get a read. And I have to, after about a minute and a half or so, and I'm starting to get bored about the lack of action that we're getting because we've been waiting for so long. And then they'll say to me like, yeah, you know, maybe you've got queen jack. They're doing the mumble talk is my favorite. I love when I get players mumbling to themselves.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then finally
yeah,
I'll yeah. just say to them, you do realize I haven't actually looked at my hand at all. So I love the fact that you could stare at me all day long and trust me, it's free. Take a picture. If it'll make you feel better, you can show your wife later. However, I have no idea what these two cards are.
So how are you going to get a read off of me?
I don't know. Yeah. I've never read it. I don't know what's in there.
Yeah,
maybe I'm lying and maybe I'm not, but that's the best part. 99% of the time I ain't lying. I didn't look.
I believe you because it's Vegas Ken.
It's Vegas Ken. We're just having a good time.
This is why it's hard to play against.
I want to spice up the game a little bit. What do you do on the flip side? Let's say collectively at the table, you've got a very kind of passive game. A lot of, you know, 3-4 callers into a pot, meaning you're going to each and every flop 4-5-6 handed. I'm thinking cash game here, or I guess a tournament. Is it more tournament?
Cash games, you can do whatever you want. These are tournament mistakes.
Okay.
You know, mistakes where it matters, where, you know, you're out of the tournament or, you know, as
you're at a
like,
limited number
I'll
of big
buy
blinds.
More chips.
Right. So if you're at a table where that seems to happen a lot, and for me, it happens a lot in PLO, like it obviously in a lot in the earlier levels, you know, you get a lot of limpers into the pot. At what point do you stop going, okay, I need to start punishing some of these limpers, or how do you read that kind of gauge? Am I like, does that make sense? Like where do you start punishing limpers?
I think it really comes down to whether or not your table wants the 3-bet or not. I think that is a key factor, because if we are going to use examples of the $600 PLO that we played at.
Yeah, for sure.
So using my table for 3 hours straight, never, ever, ever 3-bet one time. Literally not once. Even with aces, they were just cold calling.
Yeah.
They were just flat calling and
see a
laying
flop.
In the
they want to see
stuff.
A flop.
Right. So when that happens, you can realize your equity a lot better and you can just go along with the flow. This is the ecosystem. If everybody's kind of doing it, well, now you can open up your range. And again, when we're talking about PLO, it gets a little more dicey because you got to have better hands. You know, you want the higher flush draws and the nut straights and sense, but sticking to hold'em, I mean, going, you know, using my table in the PLO, if it was a hold'em table where nobody's 3-betting at all.
Right.
Well, now you can get in there with all kinds of stuff because you know you're really not going to get punished. I mean, or you could take the other approach and then start being the 3-better and start punishing them. So, either way, your simple, you know, your simple strategy of like, I'm playing ace-jack suited plus or eights plus, that kind of goes out the window when, you know, it goes open, call, you know, nobody's 3-betting from the button. And then you sneak in there with whatever, the king 10 off or the 7-5 suiteds or the ace 3 suiteds or all the stuff that, you know, at other tables would just be a snap fold. Here, you're willing to get in there, you know, see cheap flops, flop sets, flop, you know, trip sevens on the ace 7-7 when you got the 7-5. You can get in there or flop a flush draw or open under on the 6-4 deuce when you got 7-5. All these kind of creative hands that would be like, these are kind of too loose to be playing. They're not really too loose to be playing when nobody's punishing.
When nobody's, yeah. And that's funny that you think of it that way, because I was thinking of it as the alternative, as like, should I be raising more? But you're under the impression of like, you know, it's limp, small raise, you know, 2x to blinds, and then you get one caller, and then the limpers call back in. It's like, great. you're referring to the fact that nobody is three betting preflop or after flop or whatever the case may be. There's a lot of, you know, a limp bet, call, and that's it. That kind of mentality, you can go one of two ways. One, you either kind of play along that ride, open up your range. That's the change you're making. The fix that you're putting out there is that you're going to open your range and play some more cards than you normally wouldn't have because you're not going to get worried about getting three bet out of the pot. Or flip it, and if you're not comfortable widening the range, that you should become the person three betting.
Widen your three betting range. It's still widening your range. It's widening a separate range.
Widen the
range. So, like now, when you're on the button with King 10 of Diamonds.
God damn, right, so many ways to think about ranges. I never thought about what's my three bet range. Because I'm just like, I have a hard time thinking in like third dimension here. And to me, that feels like fifth dimension.
So now, when you have King 10 of Diamonds on the button and it goes and open from a guy who's been opening and free callers who are going to be calling with anything because this is the ecosystem of your table.
Correct.
Well, now let's punish them in position with a hand you wouldn't normally three bet.
I got
you. Like King 10 of Diamonds.
But because the table's kind of passive and kind of conservative, you can now three bet with the King 10, try to get heads up, and then play the flop accordingly. Like if it's all low cards, you could probably still get away with this because you were the three better.
Anytime we're three betting in position against a guy with a wide range, we already won. Like, it doesn't matter how the hand plays out. We're already in a winning advantage. I mean, we got a bunch of dead money in there. We're in position with a nice playable hand against a guy who could have anything. These are like what dreams you're made of in poker tournaments.
Oh, boy. I mean, just like Alan said to me, that's what poker players dream of. Yeah. Thanks, Alan. I'm still out of the tournament.
Right, but it doesn't matter because, like, when I'm playing in the 10K main event,
I hate to say
I'm swimming around. I feel like I'm always in a bad spot.
Right.
I feel like I never know what they have.
Yeah.
I feel like they know what I have.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if I'm in
position. It's the worst. You're not getting paid off on your big hands, and you're losing money on, you know, the hands that you need to win money on.
Yeah. So I also think if you are now the opener in this same table, same table you're at.
Can we stick with King 10 of Diamonds so then I know what's going on? So you three bet your King 10 of Diamonds. Is this part of the story or no?
No. New situation. We're good. We're just three betting. We're three betting more often. We're opening up three betting range. King 10 of Diamonds, Ace 3 of Spades, all these hands that are quote unquote good to fit into your three bet range that normally you wouldn't do.
I mean, obviously, if you're on the button
with Ace Queen of Hearts, you're going to be three betting because you should be.
Yeah. But no matter what kind of table.
You're now including your 7% or 12% or whatever frequency the solver spits out for you to be three betting, that number doubles or goes up by 50% from 7 to 10.5 or whatever. Those percentage and those include a few more hands in them. That being said, if you have the same exact table, you probably shouldn't be opening under the gun plus one with King 10 of Diamonds. It's weird to think of it that way.
Yeah, run that by me again because that doesn't make sense to me. You should just be limping.
You should just be folding.
Oh, fuck.
You should fold. Yeah, I know.
Third option. The one Ken never thinks of. Go ahead.
Sure.
Raise? No, don't raise. Too. Call? No, don't call. The other option. There are no other options. It's call or raise. Oh, I can fold. Okay, go ahead.
Fold. Oh, yeah. When you play online poker, the fold.
What am I doing laundry here? Go ahead. Okay, so run that by me again. So why am I folding?
Because you want to be tightening up if everybody's just going to call you along the way. Because now they're all realizing your equity. You're going to go five ways. You don't really want to go five ways.
In bad position with
King 10 as the opener. So you're just going to be leaking chips.
So let me see if I can get this straight and articulate it. When you're in position and you're facing all of these limpers coming in.
With a raise and a call.
Yeah, okay. A raise and a call. You want to widen your three bet range. Conversely, if you are in early position, you want to tighten up the range so that you don't fall into this, you know, the later position being in a better position and having better reads and better. That's just the only reason why. Why am I tightening up my range from under the gun or under the gun plus one or under the gun plus two?
Because everybody at the table is calling too much and they're going to realize your equity, which is why vice versa, you can come along with the 7-5s and stuff because the people are coming along and now you can realize your equity against whoever's opening. So you want to have the strongest hands when you're opening because you're going to get so much action.
Okay.
Whereas if you're in the middle there, you can come along with your weak hands because everybody's coming along, which is now making that guy's open under the gun with King 10 of diamonds getting worse and worse and worse, facing four cards, six cards, eight cards, 10 cards. Well, now his percentage of winning the hand just goes down and down and down and down. And now you're out of position and you got a million landmines. So just remove yourself from those situations. Don't be the opener with those shitty hands. Or when I say shitty hands, I mean hands on the in, on the bump, on, you know, on the border line of opening or not.
Right.
You want to tighten up the opening range while also loosening your three betting range and your calling ranges. All because this is what the table's doing. Because nobody's three betting. So when nobody's three betting, you should be and this is again early position. Now, obviously, when it gets over and it gets later and later in position, now with nobody three betting, it becomes more advantageous for you to open wider because you know you're not going to get punished. You get to play in the hand, you know, in position against the small blind and big blind. That's kind of different. But these early positions, you just want to tighten up because everybody's going to just call you anyways. So why go to the flop six ways with King 10?
Why waste the chips? Yeah, you're not getting anybody out.
Why waste the chips where you're going to lose most off? You'd rather be the guy in the middle there calling with 7-5 or the guy at the end three-betting all these guys that are opening with King 10 and calling with 7-5, three-betting them on the button.
Nice. So that's the idea of being able to adapt to the table and kind of the mentality of what's going on at the table and how to take, you know, conservative or super aggressive, whatever the case may be, and kind of plan
it goes all out the window. Right.
Yeah.
Whereas it's almost like a, you know, it's a hybrid because you are playing tight under the gun, but then all of a sudden you're playing loose. You're playing loose in the middle after somebody else opens. And then you're also kind of increasing your three betting range. And this would work well in something like the early bird or the 40, you know, where you said it best when you were dealing, how many times does it just go, guy opens, call, five ways of the flop, check, bet, call, check, bet, call, pair, you know what I mean? Where it's right. Just like, it's very standardized. Nobody's punishing anybody. Nobody's playing exploitative. Nobody's trying. Yeah. Nobody's punishing anybody. And the cards get to kind of play themselves and the people get to play passive if they want to. And you get to kind of combat all of that by constructing your ranges a little differently.
Wild. I like this. I think this is a fun kind of series that we're going to do within the show. And, you know, it's just a poker fix and how to talk about it. If you have an idea for an episode of the Poker Fix, an area or a spot or something in poker that you feel needs to be fixed, and it could be anything, you know, let us know. Hit us up on Twitter at The Overlay Pod. Check us out. We have a Linktree account, if you know what that is, Linktree/ The Overlay Pod. Yeah, it's cool. Twitter's a great way to reach us. I'll maybe make an email address eventually since we're getting slightly more outsiders from just a regular Chicagoland crowd. But if you're one of our Chicagoland crowds, we thank you. Come and see us at an event soon and let us know what you would like to hear about on the Poker Fix. Or Brandon loves to hear stories about games and how you could have played the hand better. So definitely do that. Nobody's going to ask me because nobody cares what my opinion is. I'm probably like, oh, the option there was to fold. I did not know that. That was an option.
You're saying to call? No, I'm not saying to call.
No, raise then.
You're saying
race.
To raise?
Nope.
No, I'm not saying to raise. I'm saying to fold.
Nope. Don't do that. Wait, have I looked at my cards? That's always the first poker question that I have when facing a bet. Have I looked at my cards yet? And then there's like a tree decision chart that I go down depending on which way that goes. 99% of the times, like sometimes do I look at one card and see what it's like? It's all part of the show. I'm a great show in general. You should come and see me in Vegas. I should have my own show besides this podcast.
I know you want to wrap it up. I got to talk about this Neuralink link thing.
Oh, yeah. What? I don't know what that is. What's a Neuralink?
So that's like the Elon Musk.
Oh, yeah. Neuralink. Yeah. Where you can turn it into like a robot.
And you've seen the kid that got it?
No.
Okay, so one patient got it.
Okay.
He's paralyzed.
They implanted a chip into his brain.
Correct.
Boy, you did not open with a very good start. But go ahead. He's paralyzed.
Well, I figured that everybody knows what the Neuralink is.
You mentioned what I didn't know what it was originally, but when you said, "Oh, Elon," I was like, "Oh yeah, I got you." That thing that they've been trying to do. Go ahead. What happened?
Yeah. So they put a chip into your brain.
Uh huh.
The guys, I think around my age, maybe a little bit younger. I'm not really sure his age, but he's somewhere in
early to mid 30s. Sorry.
Whoa, start with the early 30s.
Sorry.
Mid 30s.
Sorry.
Sheesh. You know, we started this podcast, I was in my 20s, and this podcast hasn't been going along now for that long. So I would say early 30s. Anyways, he's paralyzed from the neck down. He, a few weeks ago, was able to play chess on a computer by just thinking and visualizing where the pieces would go. So he'd be like, I want to move my knight here. And he thought about it, and he thought about it, and then bam, the knight would just move. I don't know how. I don't know what. This just seems wild to me. So then yesterday, he apparently beat a Barstool employee in Mario Kart, playing Mario Kart with his mind.
Come on, that can't be real.
He's like, pick up the question mark. Throw my green shell. Do a little skid around here. Turn right, turn left, boost. Just all with his brain.
No way.
So you want to tell me that the future isn't here? To me, that's literally mind-blowing.
But he can't move his arms and legs. Or his body.
Paralyzed. He's in a wheelchair.
Is that something that they thought could happen? Or
I think, he's basically just, I think that's the beginning. It was like, first was like control a computer mouse with your mind.
No, the paralyzed part, was that part of like the plan? Did they know that was going to happen or that just happened?
What do you mean?
Like, did they know going in that they were going to be paralyzed?
He was paralyzed before he got it put in.
Oh, that makes a big difference. I thought he was fine and then got the implant and then was paralyzed.
No, that's kind of an important part of the story. Something that just knocked your whole limb.
Back it up. Beep, beep, beep.
Yeah. It's really funny.
Okay, hold on. I got you. They took a person who was
A paraplegic,
implanted a computer into his brain, and now he's crushing fools with his mind like Dr. fucking Xavier from the X-Men.
Like,
that's fucking amazing.
Use my thumbs and
that is awesome.
To control, but he could just do it from his brains.
Dude, that's sick.
I know.
That's so cool. Man.
And so I don't know where he's going to... I mean, that's like world-changing.
That's
huge. Like, you can give, people that can't use their legs and arms a chance to use their brain, which still fully functions and works, to control this stuff where it's like, I don't need my limbs. I got my brain.
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's super cool.
I know. That's it. That's how I'm ending it.
That is super, super, super cool. Wow. That is awesome. Now, if he could just start playing poker and just being able to like shuffle cards with his mind, that would be kind of sick.
We'll
see how that goes. As always, thank you for listening to the Overlay of Poker Podcast. I'm your host, Ken. I almost said Brandon. And my co-host, Brando.
Yeah.
That's you.
Farewell, everyone.
Farewell, everybody. We'll see you next time. Come and see us weekend. Tell Brandon some bad beat stories.
Episode 100. Apparently, there's giveaways.
I'm going to find something to do. Episode 100 coming soon in April 2024. Bye.